United States v. Aldridge. Mr. Scudder.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mike Scudder with Neal McDonald took a court appointment to represent Mr. Aldridge on this direct appeal. It's a direct appeal following a series of convictions for wire fraud. Following a jury trial in front of Judge Zagel, Mr. Aldridge was sentenced to 144 months in prison. In appeal here, he raises three arguments. First, he challenges a particular search of business records that were introduced at his trial. Second, he challenges the 144-month sentence imposed by Judge Zagel. And third, he challenges the sufficiency of the evidence underlying the convictions. What I'd like to focus on is the search of the business records, and it's Mr. Aldridge's position that the district judge committed error in denying the motion to dismiss, obtained as a result of the November...
Strange argument to suggest that you retain some kind of interest protected by the Constitution for documents that you want destroyed.
I don't think, you know, the court concluded otherwise in the Baczynski case. Your Honor.
That make a lot of sense, does it?
Isn't
it a form of abandonment, I think, is maybe Judge Posner's
more refined way
question.
I don't think so, because it's not abandonment in the sense that the defendant did not abandon it as if an individual might putting trash at a curbside or something.
Of course, it's worse. He wants to destroy it so it won't be evidence against him. Yeah,
exactly.
It's worse. So he's treated better, right, than the garbage, the person just throws stuff in garbage?
Well, Your Honor, in Baczynski, if I may, what the
Well,
court
that's the brief case. I mean, there are a lot of differences with Baczynski, but we're always allowed to take a look at these things and consider whether these rules make any sense. And if he's trying to destroy it, and I guess for me, B, he gives it to his wife and tells her what's in it. You know, kind of share. I thought of it as a form of shared custody at that point. Why doesn't that work? I mean, in addition to the abandonment idea.
Well, at the time that he does that, Judge Wood, and Elona Rivera, his wife, opens. It's a black plastic box at that point in time. Opens the plastic box and looks at it. She's acting as an agent of the government.
Why? Why? I mean, actually, it seemed to me throughout this she was looking to save her own skin. However. She could do that and had complex, you know, a number of motivations. I don't know why we have to put her in the box of government agent when she's got such strong personal motivations to cooperate.
I don't think you have to put her exclusively in the box of government agent, but at the time that this occurred in November of 06, she'd received an instruction, if you will, from the FBI agent, keep your eyes open. For anything that may be suspicious, like certificates of deposit. It's exactly what she has in her hands.
So do you need a warrant every time a confidential informant wears a wire in a drug transaction?
No.
So why isn't that the same thing? You know, the confidential informant is certainly working for the government. The wire is a way of seizing, if you will, the contents of the conversation, or the confidential informant, you know, goes into a house and, you know, brings back something and says, I got it there.
Everything
you need a warrant for all of those things?
you don't need a warrant for every one of those things. It's implicit in your question and it's clear in the law. At this point in time, you have a private individual, the defendant's wife, after receiving an instruction from the FBI and after a pattern of back and forth with law enforcement, by the time you get to November of...
What if they just said to her, you know, You're mixed up in these things, and you know you've some potential vulnerability. Of course, you know any information you give us will probably redound to your benefit. Does that make her an agent?
I think that's what they said to her, isn't it? They eventually allow they give her immunity, don't they?
They did give her immunity.
Yeah.
On a case like that, Judge Posner, where there may be a little bit more ambiguity about whether there was an instruction given. The exact status of the person. Here, however, you have...
You know what you mean by instruction. They can't order her to do these things.
Well, no.
All they can do is appeal to her self-interest.
It was
as if they're paying her money.
No, well, it was a statement to her by a law enforcement officer. If you keep your eyes open, if you ever find anything suspicious.
Of course, that's implicit. They don't even have to say it.
Well, it was said after
that's what Judge Wood was saying. She's trying to save her own skin, so she's going to cooperate with the government. Would they tell her, you know, in your interest to cooperate, or they don't? She's still going to be a voluntary government agent, like the other informants, right?
Having that motive of trying to save your own skin doesn't preclude her from also having the status of being a government agent.
Do you really regard that as establishing her status?
And let's change the facts a little bit, again, to take it to the Fourth Amendment. There's a long line of cases where if she were in exactly this position, understanding that she was at some risk, suppose the agents, as they often do, just go to the front door of the house. Sometimes they just try a knock and see if somebody will consent to the search of a house because they don't feel like getting a warrant or whatever. And if a person with apparent authority to consent to the search of the house does so, often a spouse, a girlfriend, a mother, or somebody, then there's no warrant requirement. Well, in effect, isn't that what she's done? They've metaphorically knocked on the door of the house. She's said, you know, it's okay with me, come on in. So how is your case different from that search?
Here's how it's different, Your Honor. At the time that this occurs, Alonia Rivera, Mr. Aldridge's wife, had a back and forth over a series of months, going back to at least May of 2006 with the government. She'd produced two batches of documents at that time, had conversations with the FBI, the Bureau, in which the agent said, keep your eyes open. If you come across anything suspicious like a CD, let us know.
So this is a hard rule for the agents, because you're saying as soon as the agent encourages her voluntarily to cooperate, the agent, by the same statement, taints all evidence that she turns over.
I don't think we have to ask the court to endorse a rule that is categorical. I think on these particular facts, given the prior interaction of Alonia Rivera with the FBI and the statement to her that if you come across something suspicious like a CD, for this particular search, the November of 2006 search, she's acting as a cat's paw, as Your Honor put it in the prior argument. And that taints it on these particular facts.
Well, I know everybody likes to confine it to facts, but then you have to sort of put yourself in our position and imagine what does the opinion look like, you know, that we're writing? You know, how do we... Which ones do we tease out that say it isn't every time the agent says, you know what, Alona, it's really going to be much better for you if you give us a hand with this. We can't force you to do anything, but we're certainly here and ready to take anything you give us.
You know, Judge, I think if you draw the straw to write this up.
Like Miranda, they'll give them a little form. They'll say, please sign this. I am not a government agent. I have not been asked to be a government agent. If I should continue to turn over incriminating evidence to the government, it's entirely my own idea for my own protection. Right? That's what you're suggesting they should have.
No,
Would that work?
Oh, I mean, it may work. It may work, Judge. It's not what we're...
Well, if it'll work, then they're going to do it.
Well, but whether they're compelled as a matter of law to do it... You know, maybe is a different question. We're not asking the court to break new legal ground.
I'm saying.
I do.
You're proposing this kind of preposterous rule where these people are automatically agents because somehow they're helping the government. And I'm saying if we adopted that rule, or if the Supreme Court adopted it, the government would react by giving all these people a form to sign which they said, no, I'm not a government agent. I'm doing this for myself. I have no obligations to the government.
Let me say
this,
Judge.
That's where your argument leads. That's where it leads. That's the logic of your argument.
Well, we're not asking you to break any new legal ground here. We're asking you to take cases like Koenig and Pfeffer and Shahid that outline the framework and ask the legal question about whether at the time a challenge search occurred, whether the alleged agent had been empowered at all by the government to conduct the search, directed to conduct the search, whether the government
was... The same that I'm saying.
Well, that's, I mean, that, as we stand here right now, there's...
No one believes that these cases have established such a far-reaching rule.
Nor does Mr. Aldridge. And we're not asking you to break new ground. We're asking you to take the facts.
So what's the line?
The line turns upon whether at the time of the search, it's challenged, whether there was some exercise of government power.
Well, that's too vague.
It's, you know, Judge, I mean, I'm reading it right out of...
There's always... Yeah, that's the generals. That's not the facts of the case. That's general language. It's hard to write an opinion without general language. Then it's taken literally, and it generates absurd results.
Well, may I respond, Your Honor?
Sure.
Applied here, taking the facts as you have them before the court, Mr. Aldridge's wife had a discussion with the FBI in which they told her, keep your eyes open. If you find anything suspicious like this, having already turned over two batches of documents to us, let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McShane?
May it please the Court, my name is Heather McShane, and I represent the United States, the appellee in this appeal. The Court correctly determined that Elona Rivera did not act as an instrument or an agent of the government. The May production in 2006 resulted from Rivera's voluntary actions. It's quite clear.
Why shouldn't the government have to, I mean, if somebody like Elona Rivera wants to help out, why shouldn't they just use her as the witness on a search warrant affidavit, get a search warrant, and go do it in the way that saves all of these appeals? I mean, she clearly is interested in being looked upon favorably because she realizes that these so-called certificates of deposit are pretty dicey. I mean, I'm not clear to me how much she knows about the arrangement, because she knows there's a problem. So I guess everybody agrees if the government had just actually used her as the affiant, then we'd be fine, right?
Your Honor, we wouldn't be here today. I agree with you if the government had pursued a search warrant. But given the facts in this case, it wasn't necessary.
You say it wasn't necessary, but the fear in these cases, the reason this whole doctrine exists, is we don't want the government to say, oh, boy, these search warrants are such a pain. Let's just, you know, in every case, instead of bothering to get a search warrant, we'll just talk to somebody inside the house and have them go do all the searching for us, and then we can say that they gave us the material voluntarily and problem solved. I mean, we don't want to gut the warrant requirement by allowing the government to recruit all of these agents in fact.
I understand the point you're making, Your Honor, and again, I agree that if a search warrant had been pursued here, we wouldn't be here today on this issue. But there are reasons, some of them, you know, related to investigative purposes, why at times it's just not a viable option to the investigation to go and proceed with a search warrant. In an instance like this where Ms. Rivera and speaking with respect to the November production, I mean, that was quite fortuitous and out of the blue that the defendant walked in to Ms. Rivera's office with a black file box and presented her with what he identified to be as a box of CDs.
Now, do you think it's important that that box was unlocked as opposed to the locked briefcase in the Bashinsky case?
I do think it's an important distinction, Your Honor, but it's coupled with the fact that the defendant himself identified the contents of the unlocked box. I think that
to
the
hear
unlocked
all my
nature,
incriminating CDs. I don't remember how he identified them.
With respect to Ms. Rivera's testimony, she said at the suppression hearing that the defendant walked in and used the phrase, "These are the CDs. Destroy them." That's not a direct quote, but I can get you the direct quote.
Oh, that's all right. I mean, so he basically says, "This is the really bad stuff. Burn it," or, you know, whatever. Here's my burn box.
Yeah, the quote is, these are the CDs, and you need to destroy them.
And do you think Bashinsky was correctly decided? Because isn't that what Didn't Brzezinski want his pal to destroy the suitcase or whatever it was, suitcase?
Briefcase.
Yes, Your Honor. And the government would have been pleased if the court had found otherwise in that case as well. But the distinction here...
It seems tenuous, right?
Well,
what's the difference?
Suitcases... Well, in Brzezinski...
The fact the suitcase is locked seems so irrelevant. But, I mean, the point is, you want the thing destroyed. What difference does it make whether it's locked or unlocked?
But I think an important...
You want to have something locked that you want destroyed, but...
I think an important distinction between Brzezinski and the facts here is that, in this case, the defendant identified the contents of the black file box, whereas in Brzezinski, the holder of that suitcase had no idea what the suitcase held. And so the court held in that instance that the holder, the keeper of that suitcase, did not have apparent authority to consent to the search of that item. Whereas the facts here, when the defendant handed this black file box to Alona Rivera, he not only identified that he wanted it destroyed, but also identified the contents of that box, and the box was not locked, which then allowed Alona Rivera to also open it and confirm.
But it said, I shouldn't have called it a suitcase. It is a brief. Judge Wood was correct. But according to the statement and the opinion, Brzezinski had previously instructed Friedman to burn the briefcase and said never gave him the combination for the lock nor explicit permission to open it. I don't understand why that lock, the fact it's locked, and the agents went ahead and pried open the case with a screwdriver. I don't understand. It's not as if he locked it because, I don't know why he locked it, but at some point he decides he wants it destroyed. Why isn't that abandonment? I don't know why I'm arguing with you, of course.
the government would agree with you, Your Honor.
You're not asking us to overrule Brzezinski, but I don't really understand. I don't get the distinction. That's my problem.
Well, Your Honor, we actually are distinguishing the November production in this case from the facts in Brzezinski. Our position is that you can affirm the district court's denial of the motion to suppress with respect to all three of the productions, but with respect to your particular issue with the November production, this is distinct from Brzezinski, and that here, Alona Rivera had the black file box. It was unlocked, and the defendant himself identified the contents within that box.
She wasn't looking for anything specific, was she?
No, I think I said earlier, it was completely fortuitous. Alona Rivera did not go into this storage locker, U-Haul, and go searching for these documents. She was merely, per her testimony, at her desk in her office, and the defendant walked in with this black plastic file box and said, these are the CDs, destroy them.
So in terms of his expectation of privacy, I mean, that is a rational distinction between Brzezinski and this case, because if you open something up or indicate that it's open, tell the person what's in it, you aren't very persuasively asserting any private interest in it.
And I agree with you, Your Honor. And I think while the defendant's statement in this case that he wanted the contents destroyed goes to his subjective need for privacy, here, objectively, I just don't think that there's a reasonable basis to assume that he still had, a right to privacy.
Brzezinski. If you ask someone to destroy something, you don't want it. The other thing, it's odd why Brzezinski isn't a... Or this case, for that matter, isn't an inevitable discovery case, right?
Yes, and I would agree with you, Your Honor.
Even more in Brzezinski, they had so much information that there was contained contraband, or evidence of crime. Anyway, that's
well. Is the defendant's argument just the turning over of the box or the contents of the box? I mean, there's no inevitable discovery if she takes it off to the nearest dump, I guess.
I'm sorry, could you rephrase it?
In terms of inevitable discovery, once the briefcase or the box or whatever it is in the hands of the FBI or the police, I certainly think inevitable discovery is an argument that would come up. based on the background information they already had here from the first two productions. But if she had, in fact, complied with his desires and sunk it into the middle of Lake Michigan or something, then there's no inevitable discovery.
And I agree with you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But the court said in Buzinski the government could have effortlessly obtained a search warrant.
Yeah, once they have the briefcase.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
Well, but the implication is that they didn't have any reason
mm-hmm.
to open the thing.
Right.
But that's a side issue. Is that it?
That is, Your Honor. For the reasons we would, if the panel has no additional questions, the government would rest on its brief and ask that that both the conviction and sentence be affirmed.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McShane.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Scudder, do you have anything further?
Mr. Aldridge advanced in his papers, and I wanted to give the court an opportunity, if the panel had any questions about those.
About the sentencing?
Correct. In the conviction, and I'd note the sufficiency of the evidence supporting the conviction. I'd note that by Mr. Aldridge identifying the contents of this black plastic box to his wife, it hardly seems to us that that's an abandonment of any privacy interest that he has in the box. It's not tantamount to turning it over to the world or taking it to the curbside, proverbially, and leaving it out for the public to rummage through. And Your Honor's observations about Buzinski, I don't think you can really distinguish the case on at least the abandonment part of it on the facts you have before you. So we'd ask the court to find that the district court here committed error in not.
A little of that opinion. I don't remember the name's opinion by Justice Stevens, where he said if somehow the nature of the search is such that it could only, it's the dog sniffing, it could only reveal illegal material. It couldn't invade any legitimate interest. Then it's okay. That's here. That is when he identifies it to her as contraband, or not contraband, as evidence of crime. He no longer has any interest in it. He has identified it as a form of property in which you don't have any interest.
I guess, as Your Honor states that, I don't see that distinguishes Mr. Aldridge from the defendant in Buzinski.
Oh, Buzinski. Yeah, no, I think you have. I think Buzinski is one of those cases that has to be confined to its facts.
That's all we have. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, you have sentencing issue. You didn't discuss it in the argument. But I just have a question. How old was Aldridge when he was sentenced?
49.
I'm just curious about that. And did he have a criminal record?
His criminal history is found by Judge Zagel was in Category 2. There is a prior conviction of some type. You'd have to have one to get into Category 2.
What was it for this kind of...
No.
Something else. Okay. And you were appointed, were you not?
Sure.
Yes. Well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Ms. McShane as well.